Now, we're going to talk tech. Fancy Turkup joins us, editor of GadgetDetective.com. We're going to talk about AI and the idea of it affecting our intelligence. Morning, Fancy. Is it affecting our brains?
Morning. Yeah, it's more of a warning, I would say, from the Royal Observatory at Greenwich. It's an unusual source for a warning, but I picked it not because there's great evidence that this is happening yet, but that it makes sense to me. The Paddy Rogers, who's the director there, has basically pointed out that our reliance on instant answers from AI risks weakening our questioning, our evaluation, our curiosity and our expertise, that we may become cognitively impaired. And of course, this is not a new story. I mean, people have been saying this about Google for years. And in fact, they found that with neuroplasticity that our brains had adapted in the Google age. The argument with calculators for me in the end became that it can do the drudge work, but you're doing the real thinking. So you're just able to get to where you need to be intellectually sort of more quickly. And then there were similar arguments with sat navs and spell checks and grammar checkers and so forth. Now, you can argue, though, that this is different this time round, because this tool has the ability to outperform us. So it's not so much that there won't be any discoveries anymore, that there won't be any inventions or insights. There will, and probably more than there ever have been, but they won't be by humans. That you know, AI might be the last invention that human beings make.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting what you say about Google, because that is a real thing and has been for a few years, hasn't it? That instead of trying to remember something or recalling that little bit of knowledge, you just Google it. And now people do, unless they do pub quizzes, they do that. And I've long suspected that being able to Google it means you don't really retain it quite so well. Or maybe it's just covering up the fact that we actually never remembered very much in the first place. But this feels like one step more, because you're not just looking up facts, but it can sort of address problems as well. And issues and give you a proper answer. I mean, I now tend to go to an AI rather than Google, because Google still requires you to apply a bit of thought and work things out. And worryingly, AI doesn't.
Well, one of the things you can do is it's not either or, because, of course, Google made Gemini, which is one of the most advanced large language models at the moment. And when you do a straightforward Google search on Google.com, you do tend to get an AI answer as a paragraph as well as the search findings. And what many people don't know to do is that you can go back into the original prompt, and where it said something and then you want to ask a further question, you just tack the question on and you ask it all over again, the whole thing, and you keep adding to it, and you get, even if you haven't got a Gemini subscription, you get a really good answer from it. I think that the difficulty for this is not that it's great, we search for information, it doesn't have to be hard, we don't have to spend a day researching it in a national library or something, but I think the danger is that we become infantilized intellectually, that we lack the practice and the confidence to make decisions ourselves. We often will now ask, and in particular age groups, this is particularly true of all, but it can happen to anyone. Even for me, I have a propensity to just check in with the AI to see if I'm on the right track. And that's not always a good thing, particularly given AI's tendency to just say whatever you say is correct. One of the most irritating things I find is that it just, everything I say is absolutely right. And then
very good point, actually, Fevzi.
Thank you. I was a bit slow. Thank you there. Have I been talking to an AI all this time? It starts to make sense to me now.
Yes. No, you carry on. You're getting it spot on, Fevzi. This is great.
Thank you. But I don't think it's as simple as that. No, is it? No, you're completely right. It's not as simple as that. And so it goes.
It is worrying the way that it does do that, doesn't it? It's obviously been set up in order to make you feel good about doing this. Is that what it is, really?
Yeah, it's because it's in the training. I think we've sort of touched on this before. You know that sometimes when you're using an AI, it will give you two answers and it will say, which one do you prefer? And that's the last stage of training of a new model. And people prefer being buttered up and not being contradicted. We don't like it. But the thing is, the training leans in that way. So the more popular model, and therefore, you know, embedded in its training, is the one that is more agreeable, the one that's more likely to affirm what you said rather than push back against it. And frankly, some people's egos don't like that, but it's a matter of degree. I mean, you can be polite, but you see, if I have a really good business idea, or what I think is a really good business idea, and then the AI affirms it, but it's a god-awful idea, then I lose my house. Right? It hasn't really helped me by failing to push back against it. Now, it's quite interesting. AIs have different personalities. I use all of the major ones, and I use them together, and I use them as a team of experts in a room, and I get them to pass PDF documents around amongst themselves. So it's kind of fun the way you do it. But what I found, for example, is OpenAI's ChatGPT is kind of quite cautious. And it's quite a stickler for facts as far as it can be. And on the other hand, Google's Gemini is more energetic, more go-getting. It's probably someone that you want to have on your team if you're going to, you know, launch a new business. Whereas Claude from Anthropic, for example, is more likely to push back against you and doesn't worry so much about hurting your feelings, but it still does to an extent. And to have all of these together is quite interesting. It's just like people have personalities and skills. So weird. Do AI.
Yeah, you know, very interesting.
It's very, very, very interesting.
We'll see how it all pans out. Now, let's talk quickly about a gadget as well. And this looks an interesting one. It's an audio player. So tell us more and what makes it different.
Yeah, so I've been having a lot of fun with this. So this is what is called a high-resolution audio player. So it's called a FIO JM21. FIO is the brand. People who are into audiophiles will know this brand. It's FIIO, and it's called a JM21. So
is it like an iPod? Is it that kind of thing?
It's a lot like an iPod. And why would you have an iPod? The iPod was invented 25 years ago this year.
Yeah.
But it was subsumed into the smartphone, and iPods haven't existed now.
So why would you want one of these if you've got a smartphone?
Sure. So, first of all, quality. So when the iPod came out, up to the point when the iPod came out, people who were interested in playing music wanted the best quality. You know, there'd be long and boring arguments about this stylus or that turntable or that tape deck or those speakers or that amp. And it was all about getting the pinnacle of quality. And then Steve Jobs stood up and said, you can have 1,000 songs in your pocket, which was very seductive, but it became about quantity, not quality. You could have 1,000 songs in your pocket, but they were highly compressed MP3 files that often didn't sound any better than a cassette tape. So we'd taken one step forward, but two steps backwards, certainly in terms of the quality. And then the iPod was subsumed into the iPhone and smartphone generally. And the problem with that is then your music was in this device, which was a jack of all trades, a Swiss army knife, if you like. Yes, it could do what the iPod did, but it did lots of other things. And then over time, as the smartphone developed, most modern smartphones don't have headphone sockets on them anymore, so you have to have highly compressed Bluetooth stream coming to them. The bit that converts the bits of data into sound, the digital to audio, analog converter, and the amplifier for the headphone socket, even if it has one, literally cost pennies. You can pay £1,000 for a smartphone and have a DAC and an amp that cost pennies, which means the quality is crumb. It's really not very good at all. Whereas with this device, you can store all your music collection at full quality, uncompressed. So you have file formats like FLAC and so forth. You have a high quality DAC. This is the conversion into sound. You have a high quality amplifier that feeds the headphones. You can plug a £30 pair of headphones or a £3,000 pair of headphones, and it will make take the real benefit of it. In terms of what it can store, even as uncompressed files, or at least, files that are lossless, I should say more accurately, you can store about 80 albums worth in it without a memory card. Unlike a lot of phones, it has a memory card slot which will take up to 2 terabytes. If you were to put a 2 terabyte drive, you would get about 1,300 albums, but they would be at full quality.
Okay.
And just to be clear,
this is not one where you're streaming, you're not going on Spotify or anything. These are your own.
It can be, but these are normally your own tracks. Yeah, because think of it as a modified smartphone. So it runs Android. So in many ways, it's a lot like a smartphone, but it's dedicated to getting the most out of your music, not interrupting you constantly with notifications, not worrying about your battery dying because
So it can go online as well then?
Yeah, so you can install, things like Tidal or Spotify, whatever you like, but particularly you can stream the lossless music directly into this, or you can download it. And we go back to the days of actually owning something and not, you can subscribe, but you don't have to subscribe.
Right.
CDs are as cheap as chips now. You can go to CEX or one of these places and you get a secondhand CD for pennies, rip it, and you've got this full quality and a library that's huge. It's a bit like having something called Plex in your pocket. Plex is where you can do the same with movies and music and spread it all around your house. But this thing in your pocket, it's very modern in its technology and it's very retro in its concept. And it's I've only had this for a short while, but it's sort of, I've rediscovered my joy in listening to music again, because we've forgotten how good music can really sound. And okay. To have it in a portable platform, I love it. So it's called the JM21. It's about £200. You can get it a bit less if you shop around. Amazon sell them. Just Google it, if I dare say that. FIIO JM21. And I was surprised at how much I loved it and how little work I've done in since I've had it.
Fevzi, thank you. Fevzi Turkalp there, editor of GadgetDetective.com.